When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Here's. Juan Soto left no doubt.
What you heard was the auction beginning.
Do the Yankees have an advantage? That was a question that was asked of him. And he said, everyone has an advantage. Whoever's got the most dough. I think he would take the dollar, the single dollar more wherever.
Like a Price is Right?
Yeah, I think I.
If you are Tom Ricketts, you have to have a meeting.
Oh, you have to.
About, let's make a run here and see what it would cost. I'm asking you, 12 years, $600 million.
You're getting his prime.
As far as the Cubs, expect them to be in it in terms of making a call. Are they going to really compete with the Yankees, Mets, and Dodgers and go over? I think it's going to go over $600 million. And that's legit, not like Ohtani, $700 million. I'm very doubtful of that. This is my guess.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We made it. We got here. It's Friday. Got through Halloween.
We did. Happy Friday, Mully. We made it through a week of angst and a lot of hand-wringing. There will be a lot more today after Thursday at Hallis Hall, but we look ahead to the weekend. A lot of things to divert our attention until Sunday's kickoff.
Well, I don't know that I'm going to be thinking about much else, but maybe I'll play some Steely Dan because the offensive coordinator, he would go back, Jack, and do it again.
Oh, I like that.
What is that?
Very well played. I don't know what that was. I really don't know. It was as if Shane Waldron got behind the microphone at Hallis Hall on Thursday without being prepped, but after living in a cave in another city, oblivious to what the rhetoric was around town, maybe in his own building, and he said things that he never should have uttered and really reset the conversation instead of changing the subject. That was embarrassing for the Bears.
Someone tell the bubble boy that life moves on, for love of God.
The bubble boy.
What
the boy in the plastic bubble. Remember
that's
that?
That's what he was.
The boy in the plastic
bubble. Was that Johnny Travolta?
John Travolta was that. Yeah, he was that guy. Yes. I remember that. It's going way back for people of a certain age. They remember the boy in the plastic bubble. It was not the Bears offensive coordinator.
He grew up to be a coordinator.
He just seems insulated from reality and devoid of common sense. That's where we are with this Bears conversation. Took another turn yesterday when Shane Waldron doubled down on his terrible decision, one of the worst in recent memory.
Honestly, that was such a horrible decision. There's no measuring it. And all you got to do is, like, you walk out on deck and you lick your finger and you hold it up and you can feel which way the wind is blowing.
Exactly. I say this with all sincerity, or ask this with kind of knowing the answer, but is it a football thing? Because you heard from Shane Waldron, him saying that he saw no problem with the play call, the handoff to Doug Kramer, and he would, you know, confident it would work and really didn't show any regret. And then we watched the Thursday night football Jets beating the Texans, and we hear from Aaron Rodgers talk about the perfection with which he played. Is it a football thing?
I don't know.
You have to talk yourself into believing things that aren't true.
It's with Rodgers, it's kind of a Rodgers thing. Like, he was so bad in the first half that he felt it important to point out that he was perfect in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
I was all but really? Like, I thought the whole football thing was, you know, I got to be better when someone drops a pass. And then, he did a great job when someone came. I thought the whole idea with that sort of thing was it's team, unless there's a mistake, and then it's me.
I think so. I think that's the right way to approach it. Most people do. I also think that it's really tough to be too chesty after you just lost five games in a row. Read the room.
That was so wild.
And I just don't think that he read the room there, and I don't think that Shane Waldron read the room earlier in the day at Hallis Hall.
The only problem is those two guys can be mentioned in the same sentence only with that comparison.
Right.
I don't think that Shane Waldron has looked like the Aaron Rodgers of offensive
coordinators. No, he'll be on a list, but it won't be greatest ever.
Yeah. Won't be MVP.
It's a long list of bare offensive coordinators that were kind of immune to reality. And I didn't want to feel this way about Shane Waldron this early in his tenure, and I didn't want to jump off board at this juncture halfway through his first season. But I think yesterday kind of left people with no other choice.
I thought of Dave. I thought of Dave Wannstedt when he said that someone had made that call, he'd have called a timeout. He couldn't register that call was being made at the goal line. He'd have to stop the game. And he just asked the guy, are you serious?
Are you serious?
And I feel like that's what is required. Should this guy ever call that play again?
Well, I said on Monday, and I think that it was, I don't want to say dismissed, and it sounded a little extreme at the time, but I did ask the question out loud, rhetorical question out loud, is there anybody else that could call plays?
Yeah.
Because Thomas Brown did it in Carolina. Somebody could do it again instead of Shane Waldron. And after yesterday, I think it's a weekly question. Every week feels like now it's a referendum on whether or not Shane Waldron is in over his skis. Because I think that you're here and you have two examples in the first half of the season where you just don't know where the logic is rooted in, and there's no regret or remorse, and dare I say, or even an explanation.
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from. I never, you know, was advised to just whatever you do, don't admit you made a mistake.
I feel like
I made an error even telling that.
It's hubris.
But no one advised me.
I think it's
called Catholic guilt.
But Shane Waldron doesn't strike me as an arrogant person.
No, he just...
He's relatable. He's even likable. But this is odd devotion to something that doesn't make any sense. But let's hear what he had to say defending that call.
But it wasn't just a matter of whether it worked or not. It's that there was a higher... The theory is that there was a higher risk giving it of the ball to a guy who's never been in that situation in a real game. Mm-hmm. Is that a valid criticism?
I think there's always valid criticism when things don't work out. And like I said, we'll work inwardly. We'll wrap our arms around each other and work to look forward and execute better and call better plays the next situation that arises in.
Would you do it again if you had to do it all over again?
In that moment? Yeah, I was confident. We had trust in it. And looking back at it, you know, all the things that go into any call throughout the course of the game, whether it's early calls in the game that lead to stuff not working out or calls in the middle, calls at the end, critical calls, always assess those and go forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think he needs another group hug.
Why in the world would you admit that you would do it again? What is wrong with just acknowledging that it was really something that went wrong?
Yeah.
I have a degree of regret, or I can understand why others would. There was none of that.
Would you do it again? Well, let's see. The handoff couldn't even be completed. Let me ask something. Were they blaming the handoff? Were they blaming
the... It sounded like it.
I gotta tell you, man.
I don't understand, Molly. I don't understand that. And here's the thing is that you are in football and you're in a culture that, oh my God, I'm sick of hearing the word accountability. But we have heard it all week long and we'll talk about it. And he is in a building where the head coach... Likely because the general manager, likely because everybody has talked about accountability. And then Shane Waldron has the audacity. There's another word. The audacity to get up in front of the Bears media. Mark Potash sounded as confounded as everybody.
Oh, Potash was great.
Asking the right questions. And he's not taking any accountability for a call that was objectively terrible.
So it's like a guy took a left turn and unfortunately ran into another car and... You know, damaged his own car and maybe the driver of the other car, and then is asked, hey, you know, you took a left turn in the wrong lane. Would you do that again? I had full confidence when I took that turn that it was going to work out. Like, what are you talking
what
about?
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? So I found myself very disappointed in that. And then later insane. In the day, I found myself wondering what maybe Caleb Williams' father thought about Shane Waldron's performance, because did you see what he tweeted out?
Yeah, he retweeted the defensive coordinator from Washington, but he added the hashtags. I don't even think he said hashtag bear down.
It wasn't hashtag bear down. That's a different absurdity example of the week.
I think it was real coach.
Yeah, so Commander's defensive coordinator, yeah. Joe Witt. There's a clip of him on X or Twitter, and he's talking about the way that he was upset after the way they finished the game. They should have finished it better. As the defense, they felt like they gave the Bears too much room and too much of an opening in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Caleb Williams drove the Bears down twice in a row. So he says he was accountable, but there was a better call. Carl Williams, Caleb's dad, quote tweets it, hashtag accountability, hashtag real coach. And then it was deleted.
Yeah, it was deleted in 20 minutes. And Shane called him, right? Shane got a hold of him?
Yes, Shane did get a hold of him. Yes, and, definitely.
And confirmed, yeah, I did quote tweet that, but it had nothing to do with
Shane Reardon, afternoon producer of
also
the like Holmes and Spiegel show.
Bread maker. And I don't mean simply making a lot of money. That, I think, is part of the plan.
Hold on. You got to explain that. You got to whiteboard that for me. Shane, what do you mean bread maker?
Shane makes focaccia.
Oh,
really? And it's meant to be phenomenal. I've heard great things about it.
Wow. Focaccia?
Yes.
Now I'm distracted because I'm a little hungry.
You know, I would love it if I had some of that right now.
You'd think that maybe a teammate who would kind of want to, I don't know, share some of that bread.
Let me tell you something. Shane's a great teammate. He doesn't have to share bread with me.
I want some focaccia bread.
You're supposed to purchase it.
Okay.
So
I get it now.
Don't be expecting a handout.
Small business.
But I have gotten a couple of handouts from him, and I hold him in high esteem.
I do too, and especially because I don't know how he is as a baker, but as a reporter, he's got some good instincts. And this is what he had Carl Williams, who he reached out to, tell him yesterday. Quote, "It's an innocent comment. I like what the Commanders are doing. I know a lot of guys over there. It's got nothing to do with the Bears."
Well,
fair enough.
And unfortunately for Carl, or maybe the undercurrent of what Carl did is that the couple of things we're looking for are kind of hashtag accountability, hashtag real coach.
Yes, we're looking for real coaches with accountability in Chicago. Yes, I think that's a really nice way to tie things up. So I have two thoughts there. Number one is that
hashtag bear down.
I hope that Shane rewards that answer and that accessibility that Carl Williams gave him with maybe a loaf of bread.
Now you're making perfect sense.
He can send Carl Williams maybe a loaf of bread. The other thing is, and
how about
this is
this? Caleb's home. He needs something to eat late at night. He tries the focaccia bread. Next thing you know, Shane's on every shelf of every store in North America.
That's a nice little. That's a nice idea.
That's a way to earn it.
Assuming that a loaf of bread. Caleb doesn't like the bread so much that he starts to eat more, gain weight, and get slow.
Caleb's career ruined by focaccia.
Yes, he's addicted.
His obsession with focaccia.
Okay, now the second point is more serious. I would not want my opinions to be out there and have my son held responsible for them.
Right.
So I don't want to link this, as it's so easy to do.
Of course it
that
is.
This is a son speaking on behalf, a father speaking on behalf of the son. I think it's interesting. Carl Williams has a place in the sort of media scene because of what, you know, at USC and all the stories before Caleb was drafted. But I don't look at this as a big deal. It's interesting.
I didn't look at it.
It's interesting.
And I know a lot of Bear fans that would text out accountability and real coach. I'm just being honest after watching that game. Yeah. And I think when we talked earlier in the week, we were talking directly to Matt Eberflus about accountability and real coach. Part of being a football coach is holding others and yourself accountable. And he knows that.
He knows that.
And by all accounts, Dan Weider had a great tweet, speaking of Twitter, and it looks like perhaps a certain Tyreek Stevenson, hashtag bear down, he hashtag bear down.
I know he did.
Apology.
I know he did. that really struck you as being sincere.
I just thought it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. He, you know, the guy like basically has this awful mental breakdown. And he cost them a game, and then he like, hey, my bad, it's not going to happen again.
I'm sorry
again.
I let down a football city and betrayed every instinct I ever did as a football player.
Hashtag bear down.
Bear down.
And I loved that that's the way he concluded it. But. And that's why I keep mentioning hashtag bear down. I've been doing it all week, plus it annoys you. And I feel like every time I do it, you get very dismissive.
Maybe just slightly.
But I do think that we have been encouraging both accountability and real coaching, right?
Yes.
You got to be a real football coach now. You got to do something about it. And apparently he is. According to Dan Weider, it looks, all signs point to the idea that Tyreek Stevenson will not start in Arizona. He will play.
That is finding some sort of middle ground from Matt Eberflus and really trying to balance the need for accountability,
yes,
the buzzword of the week,
yes,
with the common sense approach to not losing his locker room by benching a player that is fairly popular, it seems, and also valuable in a secondary that's pretty beaten up. So the health of the secondary probably is contributing to how this is handled, because it is the NFL, and as much as you want to make a statement about strength and you can't tolerate this kind of behavior, you also have to stop Kyler Murray.
Would it be acceptable if that were to be the way this was dealt with? If the guy doesn't start the game but plays the game?
Well, I think he'll probably play in the game based on some people you talk to, but yeah. I don't think he'll start. And I find that acceptable. It's probably not the way I would have gone. I would have maybe been a little more immediate, and I would more definite and a little bit more clear and simple and strong in the message you want to send. This is on brand.
I mean, this is
on brand because it's intentionally vague.
But he's clouded the message.
Yes.
So this would be the right thing to do. Okay, it's a bare minimum, but that's something you should do. And I understand the injuries and everything else you're talking about, but I do think it's kind of a bare minimum, and you've clouded the message by not being just completely. You've tried to couch everything you're saying, like instead of just saying, "Well, we'll see what happens on Sunday." Instead of just being purposely vague to make it look like you are going to do something, to make it look like you're not doing anything, is silly to me.
Well, I think that you're right. You're right on the point, because I think that this is consistent. And when you say bare minimum, I think that's the perfect way to put it, because that's what we've come to expect when we're talking about accountability in Halas Hall.
Yeah.
The bare minimum.
The bare's minimum.
Yes. No doubt about it. So we have that to look forward to. It's going to be a game that I think shapes the rest of the season.
I couldn't believe the statistics on that. Did you see that? The PFF put out a thing that said the Bears, if they win the game, they're 71% likely to make the playoffs. If they lose, 44%. I mean, this is...
a wide swing.
This is a very wide swing of possibility. And I do think that it's a game, given the fact that you're on the road, given the fact that you're beaten up, given the fact that you lost the way you lost a week ago. I think it's a very important game to the season and really to the coaches.
No doubt about it.
I think it's a must-win game, if I may quote Dustin Rhodes.
That's why I think that they're approaching this road trip with a little bit more attention to detail, as it seems you talk to people, and they're going to be maybe treating this with a little bit more urgency or seriousness. I don't know if that's consistent with what we have heard. The rhetoric has been cloudy. It has been murky. It has been all the things, and definitely a muddled message. But if they win, I think we'll move on and we'll be able to say the outcome, the end justified the means, perhaps. because all you've got to do is get back on the winning track. And that in the NFL, as you know, is the easiest way to put some of these things in the past. Yep. But it's not going to be easy after yesterday. It really isn't. What Shane Waldron did, and we heard it, was just like, gives you very little confidence that this offense is going to be able to move forward and do the right thing and do the simple things well.
Right, right. It was nonsensical. It just was nonsensical. It was a terrible call. You know, we speculated in the moment on our little text chat, was that the worst call in Bears history? That's how bad a call it felt like. You're trailing in the game and you got cutesy cute. You decided to, you know, hey, why don't we blow off a smoke bomb? And then we'll have all the kids come to... It was just...
It warranted more than an endorsement.
Yeah. Yes.
4 days later.
Right.
So that was Shane Waldron, unimpressive at the podium. Meanwhile, I thought the White Sox introduced their manager, and he was Will Venable. Yeah,
I was impressed with
Will Venable. Very impressive.
Yeah, he's a well-spoken man. I enjoyed hearing that he likes Chicago. His time in Chicago, he and his wife had a list of criteria, and apparently Chicago was one of them. That's great. That's wonderful.
His time with the Cubs seemed to resonate with him in terms of being a city and a place where he liked the environment, liked the sports culture here, and he and Chris Getz appear to have hit it off. And you can see why. Both guys, pretty good major leaguers for a period of time. Venable had a few seasons, I think three in a row, that he was a very good player, a very good outfielder. And so you can see why he and Getzy would get along. His personality seemed like a very thoughtful guy, very smart,
right,
obviously.
Guy. Yep, right guy.
Ivy leaguer, basketball player. Now he comes to the White Sox ready to get started and eager to attack a challenge that seems pretty, pretty massive.
Well, I mean, I agree that it is massive. And I agree that, like, if they turn their season by 21 games, that doesn't mean they're in the playoffs. It means that they lose 100 games. It's shocking how bad they are. But I also think that as difficult as the role may be, as difficult as the future may look, there's going to be very little he could do other than succeed. In other words, they kind of hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the talent doesn't make a great improvement, although maybe it does get a little bit better. Certainly they've got money to play with if they're willing to do that. After what happened yesterday with Yoan Moncada, they declined the option for $25 million. They got to give him $5 million. But
buy him out for that.
Yeah.
Money well spent.
You do that in a heartbeat.
You got to move on.
There's other guys I'd buy out, but let's not get into that. I do believe, though, that he's going to do better than what was here in the past, because I do think you couldn't get much worse than what happened last year. I don't know how you could possibly, even as a first-time manager, if you stumbled around, you know, given the people he's been around and the people who have coveted him and the way that good people have hired him and everything about his resume, it would indicate they're going to get better. So I can't imagine him, you know, at the end of next year, we're not going to say that guy couldn't manage his way out of a paper bag. We're going to say, wow, like, they really didn't have enough talent. They probably topped out.
You want it to be obvious, more obvious, that the problem is the roster more than it is the manager?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't obvious last year.
Because both were really lacking and both were not major league quality.
Pedro especially. Let's separate. I don't want to say.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm not going to. There's no defense.
Ray Sizemore apparently did enough to earn a job. He's probably going to be on this staff.
So, if he wants to stay?
Yeah, so God bless.
Would you want to stay?
Me? I don't know Grady Sizemore.
Yeah, I don't know him.
I don't know enough about
him. He got passed over for the job.
I mean, I don't want to.
Representative sample was pretty positive, yeah. But I don't know.
I mean, I probably would, you know, figure if I keep working, I'll get back to there someday.
I would think so. He's fairly young, and I think he probably feels like he did represent himself pretty well last year in an interim role, pressed into a tough spot. Surprisingly so. Remember how surprised he was to get that job? Yeah, but Will Venable, I think, had a very good first day.
He did. He made a nice impression. God bless them. Here's hoping. Now, you know, take that $20 million. We take the $18 million, whatever's left. Split it up among about five guys. Get better. Get better. Have a better team. That would help him. All right. We've got we got the pick six next. We're going to get into all the stories of the day. We're going to pick them apart and chew them over. And we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Were you disturbed to hear Bears OC Shane Waldron double down on the Doug Kramer handoff at the goal line?
Like I said, I felt confident in the moment in that call, and it didn't work out.
What will you do if they do try that once again?
I'm jumping. I don't know what one can do, but I would probably, if they tried that again, like in the same situation in a game where they were trailing the whole bloody game and they get down to the fourth quarter, you get to the goal line and you try to get cute, I think I, and it's only 1 yard, you fumbled the ball, I think I would probably call for mass resignation. Just, I would not want anyone fired. I don't believe in that. I'm not the coach killer here amongst the three of us. But I would definitely expect someone to publicly resign.
I will resign as a Bears fan if in this calendar season, in this stretch, that play is run again with the Bears trailing. So if the Bears are losing the game and they call on the mini fridge to hand off the ball, I personally want him as fullback. I want him as the fullback. I like that. It's worked. But if they hand him the ball when they are trailing in a game during this season, I will resign as a Bears fan. Mm.
I am done with the mini fridge. I like Doug Kramer as a player. I would unplug the mini fridge.
Wouldn't even use him as a blocker?
No, not now.
Why not?
Because I think that you now have removed the
too much temptation.
Hold on. What you do when you put him back there is that you create the illusion that he could carry the ball or he could throw it to him. Mm-hmm. It's fun when you have the novelty. It's no longer a novelty. The element of surprise is missing because there's no way they're ever going to hand the ball to him. So you now have a tendency. You know exactly what's coming. You don't have to worry about that. Not that that's a big thing, but you have removed that play from your playbook because you couldn't execute it and you never should have tried. So that's why I'm down on it. That's why I would eliminate it. Bring back Kerry Blassen game. Let guys do their jobs that are supposed to do their jobs. Doug Kramer, not a fullback. Clever, cute, fun. It's over. So I think you move on. Here's the thing that we have to remember with Shane Waldron. This was something he had days to consider. The Bears are creating this story and lengthening its shelf life because they chose to put him there on a Thursday. We're talking about it on Friday morning still because of their lack of knowledge and awareness themselves organizationally.
Yes.
We have a stunning lack of awareness by the offensive coordinator working in a building where there's a stunning lack of awareness of how to handle and shape the optics. Get a clue, guys.
I found hope within what you're saying. Do you believe that they want to keep that role alive in terms of him as a blocking back? And that's why Shane Waldron is claiming, oh, we could hand it off to him. And when in reality, he has no intention to, but he doesn't want teams to know what you just said.
Probably so. Probably so.
That makes me feel better about
but
the guy.
It's even coming, that gamesmanship is coming at the expense of credibility. And I think this week, credibility is more important than gamesmanship.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
And they lost it.
Was the overall injury news positive or negative for the Bears? Can Montez Sweat's availability outweigh the offensive line's instability?
Well, I hope so for the Bears' sake. Montez Sweat being back in a limited fashion gives you hope that he can be there. He is the most important guy when you're talking about a banged up and disciplined secondary. And Kyler Murray on a little bit of a roll. You need Montez Sweat to keep contained, to get to the quarterback. PFF, you mentioned those metrics earlier in the show. They have Montez Sweat. He's one of the top five pass rushers in football right now. That's a multiplier. So maybe he can wreck this game, but I fear that the offensive line's instability without Tevin Jenkins looks like he's banged up. They don't have Braxton Jones. Larry Borum is coming back, but what does that mean? What shape is he in? I don't know. I think this is going to be a game dictated by the Bears' offensive line instability, and that might outweigh Montez Sweat's availability. So I hope I'm wrong, but that's the fear that I have.
I'm very afraid of the Bears' offensive line this week, and it might have a role in my selection of this game. It's great news that Montez Sweat's back out there. I didn't doubt that Montez Sweat would be back out. He doesn't need to practice. He just needs to get out there and play, put his hand in the dirt, and go get the other quarterback. That's what his job is, hold the edge. But the offensive line's instability, as the question states, is very concerning.
Yeah, I agree that it's concerning. I do believe, though, and I mean, I got to be careful how I say this. I remember for years the Bears had like all sorts of problems with safeties. They would have different safeties and guys were getting hurt. They were rolling guys. And they had a game where they had two backup safeties. And honest to God, they played better than the starters. And I think that when, you know, there is always a hierarchy to teams, but I think Matt Pryor has been a better guard than Nate Davis. And I think Matt Pryor will probably be the left tackle if indeed you can't go with Braxton Jones. So I guess the point I'm making, and now you got to be careful, I don't know how big the difference is between some of these guys. I think that if Montez Sweat can't go, the next best player is miles worse than him, that you're not nearly as good. He is the multiplier. I don't think any of these guys we're talking about are multipliers necessarily. I think there's some solid linemen who could be replaced by solid linemen. I'm not sure you're going to notice as big a drop-off. And the way that offensive line play works, it's a team within a team, and guys can help each other and they can work together. And part of the teamwork aspect of it is what makes lines better than individual players are. So the fact that they haven't played together is a little scary. But if Larry Borum is able to go, if Nate Davis is inspired in any way, he's a good enough player to step in and play. I still think that Tevin Jenkins might be able to start, but I don't think he'll be able to finish. But I think Sweat is the big story here because there's no one like him on the roster. So if you get him back, the drop-off isn't nearly as bad. I'd rather a injured Montez Sweat than a fully healthy backup. But at the offensive line positions, I don't know how good the top-shelf guys are that the second level might not be able to replace them. We've already seen it happen.
I don't know. That's a tricky question.
What did you make of our guy Dan Weider tweeting the following? This from X. From what I understand, it will not be a surprise if Tyreek Stevenson does not start in Arizona. Signs seem to be pointing in that direction. End of tweet. Is this a sensible move?
It's pretty much one of the few things you almost have to do. I mean, I felt a sense of relief when I read that tweet. I really did. I think that you cannot ignore what happened. And you can't pretend, well, we had a talk with him. Well, one of the captains said something and, you know, we talked to the council and everyone decided that we need him and we love him and he's going to be with us for a long time. That's all fair and well, but you got to respond to what happened. And at the very minimum, you got to bench the guy to start the game. I think we talked about this earlier in the week. You know, there are more, we went back and forth. There are certainly more severe punishments, but at a bare minimum, you need to acknowledge what he did, and you need to do so with some form of punishment, and it has to be public because everybody needs to know. The whole team needs to know. The whole league needs to know that you're a serious football team, you take it seriously, and there are consequences for actions.
Well, I think Dick Tracy is on the case here. Yes, I think this is what's going to happen. They are going to do that. And to your point, Mully, it's the bare minimum of what they need to do. I hope it's not, like we've seen this before, like in colleges sometimes, I hope it's not the token, like one snap.
I hope not.
Right? It can't be. That would be nonsense. It can't be one snap, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's in the game. Now, I think this would be interesting. If we can all agree that they need him, and we've heard all his teammates say they need him, and I think deep down, if we're really forced to admit it, they need him on Sunday because they're missing. Gordon's not making a miraculous, you know, no. He's not making a miraculous recovery. They also don't have Brisker. They play different positions, but they need him. Okay, so we have to see him play. Now the question is, I think for all of us and our listeners and our texters is, okay, what is it? Is it a quarter? Is it a series? Is it a snap? Or is it a half? I think those are probably the four options. A snap, a series, a quarter,
minimum,
or a half.
Series, minimum.
I think that's the question. I think that's what, I think Bears fans, where do you fall if those are your four options?
Quarter,
I know we're not big on polls here.
Okay.
I know we're not big on polls here, but I think that's an interesting four options. And I think one of those four things has to happen. And for me, I'll answer my own question. It's a series. He does not play the first time Arizona has the ball at all. Now, some would argue, well, if they get a first down, you know, if they don't go three and out, you put him in then.
All overstating Tyrique Stevenson's value on a defense that is still very good without him.
But I would agree with you, David, if it was 100% healthy, but they're not.
I think that what Matt Eberflus is looking at as a head coach, his credibility is at more risk of suffering and being damaged than the Bears' defense is without Tyrique Stevenson. And without action, Matt Eberflus's credibility, accountability, word of the week, is in danger of being in a state of disrepair. And I think the defense can still function at a high level with Terrell Smith replacing Tyrique Stevenson. The drop-off isn't that great. And I don't think that you need to go into this game with one series, one quarter. No. Right now, Tyrique Stevenson, because of this week, because of what happened last week, lost his starting job. His starting job is now Terrell Smith's. And that Terrell Smith is the starter against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. And Tyrique Stevenson plays if somebody gets injured. Tyrique Stevenson plays if there's a six defensive back package. Tyrique Stevenson plays on special teams. But he's not starter. He's not part of the starting defense. And he doesn't go in there after a play or a series because that looks too symbolic and really high schoolish. If you're going to make a statement, make a statement. Don't be wishy-washy. Flusie will be wishy-washy. It's probably going to be a series or a quarter, but it shouldn't be. If I were Matt Eberflus, I would just follow this through to its logical conclusion to me. That is, he's a backup this week. Then we'll reevaluate depending on how Terrell Smith plays and how your defense functions. But Tyrique Stevenson did this to himself. Can they afford to miss him against the Cardinals? Can you afford not to do anything if you're Matt Eberflus? That's a bigger question.
There's a lot of questions in the air.
Ozzie, what stood out to you about the Will Venerable Zoom call introducing his new role as the White Sox manager, 44th in the franchise history? How difficult is that job, and how will you personally judge his success?
Will Venerable came across as bright as we expected. I didn't remember him from his Cub experience because we don't necessarily talk to a lot of first base coaches. I wasn't doing Inside the Clubhouse when Will Venable was in town, so I didn't really know much about him. I like his pedigree. We talked about Theo Epstein hiring him, working alongside Joe Maddon, Alex Cora, and Bruce Bochy. He could not come with any more glowing recommendations and any more of an impressive kind of collection of mentors. This is a guy who's ready for this challenge at 42 years old, alongside 41-year-old Chris Getz, his partner and boss, the general manager of the White Sox. I think the Sox fans can finally find something about their manager that they're proud of. And that's what you heard yesterday. Will Venable giving you something, a source of pride and a vision, and maybe some things about his credentials that you think are encouraging. Massive job, huge challenge, a lot of things outside of his control. But you got the sense that whatever he can control, it's going to be handled intelligently.
He came across well. One quote that I picked out of the Zoom. That was the only problem I had with it. I don't like that they did a Zoom to start this off, but they could have waited. I have an underdog mentality and all the things that come with that, end quote. He's also been around a bunch of good people, David, as you pointed out. And if you can take a little bit of the good from all those different guys and also block out the bad, that things that didn't work with those guys, and bottle that, that could be a really successful thing. But Mully, you always say it, and you're right. A manager in baseball, especially, is worth 3 to 4 wins. Okay. Success next season would be to avoid the 100 loss. 99. That would, you know, don't lose 100. That should be the whiteboard when they walk in there in Mesa, Arizona. Don't lose 100. 100's in the rearview mirror. Eyes straight ahead. Forget about last year. They're not that talented on the field, but at least they could be professional. Don't boot the ball around, run the bases right, say the right things, engage the fans. That would be a good start.
I really was impressed with the guy. I thought he was well-spoken. I liked the stuff he said about Chicago. I thought that when I kind of was listening to the whole thing, I thought, you know, it's a pretty good hire. Like, this guy, people wanted this guy. They apparently started with 60, cut it to 20, then went to, I mean, really? I don't know. That's a bit much, in my opinion. But I'm glad they settled on this guy.
Wouldn't you love to know, though, like the 60 or 20? Any interest or not anymore?
It's over. No. Don't even care about the 5.
No?
I know who the 5 are.
I'd like to know why they didn't try to get guys with experience.
Yeah. Well, I think you do know the answer. I think that the general manager doesn't have experience, and he's looking for a partner. He's not looking for someone to mentor him. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it's that simple. And these guys are roughly the same age, and they kind of work together. I like that definition, Dustin. If they could somehow not lose 100 games, that'd be a raging success of a season. But I think the guy's going to do good. You know, here's the thing. It's player development, right? I want to see younger players get better as the year goes on. I want to see guys that look like they can play a little bit, and then they improve with this guy. I do. I want to see, like, different and better, number one. But I don't need you to go out and overwhelm me with your free agent signings. I need you to show me that you're getting better and that this guy can work with people and make them better. And I'm very curious to see a lot of the talk about the analytics and, you know, the idea that he has worked for a lot of different places that have done things a lot differently and have information at the fingertips of players a lot better than the White Sox have, would seemingly indicate that he's going to be, you know, when I was here, we used to do this. When I was over there, they had a good job of doing this. Like, I would hope that he can gather more information for the player, and that will help with player development.
Well, it's a great question, Molly.
That's the voice of Casey Johnson. If Zach LaVine has a sprained shoulder, as our guy Casey Johnson reported, should he play through any pain or take a seat and wait till he's at least 100%? Is what benefits Zach and what benefits the Bulls the same thing?
I like this question because it goes to the heart of what is the big topic right now in the league, which obviously, when you think about it, the $100,000 fine that Philadelphia got over whether or not they were forthright about Joel Embiid and the things they said about Joel Embiid. The league said in that they understand that Embiid is injured and does have an injury, but that the coaches and the general manager are not allowed, Daryl Morey and Nick Nurse are not allowed to say the things they said, like, we're not going to play him in any back-to-backs, and we need to worry about him being there for the playoffs. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who was telling me that his cousin was desperate to go see LeBron and Bronny play at the United Center. And I said, and the, apparently the tickets were very expensive when they looked into it. And I'm like, that game's at the end of the year. It's like in March or something. How do you know Bronny's still in the NBA? And how do you know they're going to be playing LeBron? Like, Dustin will tell you the time we went out with a group to see LeBron, and LeBron was this
no
is back in Cleveland, well, and he opted out of the game.
To that point, there was a good column in the Philadelphia Inquirer, I think, yesterday about how ticket prices should be reduced.
I agree with
that. If Embiid isn't playing Sixers games.
Yeah, and that was one of the questions that one of the reporters asked Nick Nurse is, hey, how are the fans supposed to know what games to go to if you won't tell us when he's playing or when he isn't playing? I think it's a valid question, and I think that it's a valid problem for the league. But I think in this circumstance, it's about player management. And if everybody in the league is taking time off, I don't think a subluxation should be okay in terms of Zach LaVine playing. I'd probably sit him.
Yeah, I think you sit him, especially tonight. You're over 500 for the first time since 2022. No reason to push it. And I do think that what is best for Zach and the Bulls is the same thing at this point.
That's interesting. I'm not quite sure it is. I think the best thing for the Bulls might be for him to play through this. I think they want to win games. They sure are playing like they want to win games. Billy Donovan, first of all, a total aside, I didn't realize he didn't like the moniker Billy Ball.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a good story in the Sun-Times, and he mentions that, and I was like,
Knock it off.
Well, no, we both are like the kind of like a complimentary way.
Yeah.
Like Billy Ball is a style of play. It's distinguishable to the Bulls. And anyway, I think that the Bulls probably want Zach LaVine to keep shooting, keep playing, and grind through it because he's been good. He's off to a very good start. But I think the best thing for Zach might be to take a couple nights to make sure he's not playing through pain. He's going to have something that lingers. Because we know what happens when things linger. Maybe his agency gets involved, and maybe all of a sudden he's on a three-week hiatus. And that, I think you want to rest him as much as he can. The Bulls are better with him than without him. I admire him for wanting to play through this, knowing the circumstances of this season, but he's just a total pro, wanting to go to work. The NBA does have a bigger problem on their hands when you look big picture. I hope that this is just a short-term thing with Zach.
You have to ask hard questions.
By Monday, do you expect Cody Bellinger will have opted out of his Cubs contract? How big of a priority is bringing Bellinger back? And how is your answer the same or different than it was last year at this very same time?
See all the names of the free agents who opted out? Everybody's expecting these big paydays. I don't know what kind of advice they're getting from their agents, but I get it. They want to test the open market. A lot of people are going to be waiting, I think, for months for deals to come through that aren't as big as they're expecting them to be. There's going to be some atrophy, I think, when we talk free agent salaries, and this winter is going to be maybe a cold one for a lot of agents and free agents. I feel totally different about Cody Bellinger this offseason than I did last offseason. I thought last offseason it was a priority, and I think job one for Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins to bring back Cody Bellinger, and I don't feel that sense of urgency this year. I think if he goes, he goes. The Cubs have to change the complexion of their lineup. They have to get somebody that qualifies as a star. The biggest name on that list yesterday wasn't necessarily Cody Bellinger because it wasn't on it yet, and it won't be when he joins it. For me, the biggest name on that list, besides Juan Soto, which everybody understands is going to be a free agent, but Pete Alonso is on that list of free agents. So if you can change the look of your lineup, thanks for the memories, Cody, but I don't feel like this is one of those winters where you're going to be hitting refresh and wondering if he's opting in or signing with the Cubs or coming back.
David, I agree with you 100%. I think this year's totally different than last year. I think Cody was great for the Cubs at the time when they got him, and the Cubs were great for Cody when they signed him. It was kind of a match made in baseball heaven, if you will. They both helped each other significantly, and Cody got paid, but 18 home runs for 30, you know, just give or take, for $30 million, that's not cutting it. Pete Alonso, in the same amount of at-bats, I think hits 27 home runs instead of 18. which still, I mean, you know, if you're a corner position player in Major League Baseball, you know, if you're one of these kind of guys that are in these $25 to $35 million a year, you better be hitting a home run for every $1 million you're paid. In my opinion, that just should be like a base type of thing. And listen, I like Cody Bellinger. He did everything the Cubs asked him to do. You know, he moved from center to first. And, you know, and then he played right field when they decided that Suzuki was no longer. You know, so I don't know where he wants to play. And if he's looking at the Cubs, maybe he sees himself as a center fielder. But that ship has sailed here because they have a young guy that only can play center field. So I don't even know if Cody wants to be here. I looked at a list, top 25 free agents for 2025. He checks in at number 11 on this list. You know who's four ahead of him? David and I's guy. Pete Alonso. Okay. That, so again, if I can get Pete Alonso for about the same money per year, I'm going Pete Alonso at this point. It's just a change. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think that you answered that well, because I think that the answer to the question is that the guy is a first baseman and a DH, and he doesn't hit enough home runs to be that. So if he's going to opt out, I would say, you know, farewell, dear friend. And I would go with the rookie as the center fielder. I think that he grew into that role as the season went on, and he was really good by the end of the year. And I think that he's perfect for that spot. And that's the reality of baseball and moving forward, etc. So I don't dislike Cody Bellinger, and he had one great year here, but I don't think that, I think that's pretty costly, and I think you can do better in terms of getting a power guy.
Fare thee well.
Yeah, fare thee well,
dear friend.
All right, we've got we got the extra point, and I think you know what it is. We're going to pick them. Woohoo! It's a pick 'em. We'll pick 'em. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 the score.
According to PFF, the Bears have a lot to gain and lose in Arizona. A win makes them a, believe it or not, 71% likely to make the postseason. But a loss lowers those chances to 44%. Which will it be, a win or a loss? And please supply a score.
This is a tough one to pick. This is a very difficult, I think, game to break down because of what the Bears did in Landover, Maryland. I can't sit here in good conscience talking all week about how much the Bears brass coaching staff should be questioned and wonder about their accountability and their togetherness and cohesion and all the things, and then tell you that they're going to go on the road for the second week in a row and win a football game. I feel like that's inconsistent logic. And I'm not talking myself into picking against the Bears as much as I'm hearing what I'm saying since Monday morning started, and all week long the rhetoric has been similar. This is not a team you trust. Kyler Murray is still a special quarterback, and the Bears offensive line is still in shambles. To me, those are the two biggest factors on Sunday, regardless of all the talk about whether or not Tyreek Stevenson plays a quarter, a series, or not at all. I think this is a big problem for the coaching matchup. Jonathan Gannon is a disciple of Matt Eberflus. Worked together in Indianapolis. They both respect each other. But I think that I trust the pupil more than I do the teacher. The Bears are at a coaching deficit after a coaching loss. The desert is no oasis. The hope drought continues. Cardinals 23, Bears 17.
Oof. I hope you're wrong, David, but I'm with you. This, for me, is the hardest game so far that we've had to pick. I am very concerned about the offensive line, and when you have a bad offensive line, you usually have a bad afternoon or evening, depending on when your game is kicking off, but I am still going to say that these Bears are going to rally at least around each other, if not their head coach, and the defense will stiffen up. Bears will just get it done 21-20.
Yeah, this is a really difficult one. I think that it's the combination of the injuries and then just kind of feeling at about the organization. And I try to ask myself, let's say that there wasn't a Hail Mary. Let's say, just for the sake of the argument, that the Bears won that game with a couple fourth quarter moments, and you felt like Caleb Williams was improving and was able to do the specialty in the games instead of the way you feel, which is that they're, you know, hashtag accountability, hashtag
real coach.
So I am torn there with this. I feel like this is a game they have to win. And sometimes the more desperate team is the one to take. And I feel like the Bears are going to pull it out. I will say 20-17, hashtag bear down.
Okay, hashtag bear down. I actually hope you're right. I don't think that you go into games rooting necessarily. I think we talk about them. Whatever happens, happens. But it portends to be a long season if they lose.
In
Arizona,
the those numbers are pretty telling. The PFF numbers. I don't think the Bears are going to make the playoffs, but I think they're better than they showed at the end of the game a week ago, and I think that they should be entirely focused on this game because of what happened.
Doesn't that concern you, though, more? They are a team that should have won that game. They are a team that's better than they've shown, and they are a team that now habitually underachieves.
Finds ways
to lose.
I totally understand that. I do think, though, that while Arizona did a great job of going into Miami and winning that game, that was Tua just back. That was, I'm sure... I just think that on a week-to-week basis, the NFL changes and shifts. Mm-hmm. And I think that with this Arizona team, they've got to be feeling pretty good about themselves, and the Bears got to be feeling pretty bad about themselves. And I don't believe that Arizona, with Kyler Murray, as good as he is and as good as they played, I don't think they're better than Washington. And I thought Washington, the quarterback, despite... having the ribs, managed to play, and he made them a really dangerous team. And I don't know that I feel the same way about this Arizona team. And frankly, I feel like Jalen Johnson is going to have a nice game against Marvin Harrison Jr.
But what about Trey McBride?
And Trey McBride's going to be a problem.
He's a problem.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
These things are logical football arguments. Yeah. I think in Arizona, they're not quite sure what they have in the Cardinals, who 4-4, they went to Miami, won a game on the road. They're at the top of the division. I don't think many people expected them to be there midway through the season.
Yeah.
But I just feel like all the things that you say, it's going to be a close game, are valid.
It's going to be a close game. They all are.
I just didn't want to pivot like that all week. I've been very down on the Bears for understandable reasons. And it's a good question. What if the Hail Mary had never happened? Would you still have been as down on the Bears? I don't think so. But it is the way.
So would you be picking them to win this week?
I think it would have been a different week.
I agree completely.
Would have been a different conversation surrounding that building.
I think that result... and the desperation they're in now will make them more focused than they were.
I think desperation is a good word. I think that affects maybe players. I don't know how it affects coaches. And I don't know that
you don't trust the coaching.
I don't trust the coaching. And I'm down on the staff.
I don't blame you.
I trust the talent on this team more than I do
it's legitimate.
The coaching infrastructure, because I think that – but can talent overcome that? That's where the Bears are this week, I think. They need their talent, their roster, to overcome their coaching.
I picked against them last week because that statistic with the road games and everything is so overwhelming. And for some reason, I'm going against that statistic this week. It's not logical.
I thought you would. That's kind of one of the other things I picked the Cardinals.
You thought I would?
I thought you would pick the Bears.
Oh.
And I just thought a good little debate would be good.
Yeah.
Healthy.
No, you could.
And I knew Dustin was going to pick the Bears.
Oh, I mean.
That's a given.
Yeah.
Although it will be very interesting if they hand the ball to Doug Kramer on third and goal with the game tied or trailing and he comes in a Packer fan on Monday.
That's what he has to do.
I will buy him a jersey.
Let me tell you something.
If it happens.
If, you know, we got to tell him that, too. If Dustin went to get us coffee. God bless. But if that happens,
yeah,
he has to become a Packer fan.
I think that's
what our new
that's
rule
the
is.
Understanding. That's
now I'm cheering for Doug Kramer to get a handoff. That would make me feel better about that play.
See, it sounds like Shane Waldron is too.
Yeah, if I knew that Dustin had. But I like the idea that Waldron was trying to be consistent.
Let's talk about that when we come back. Okay. Let's talk about that.
All right, we'll do that. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw for the Score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Would you do it again if you had to do it all over again?
In that moment? Yeah, I was confident. We had trust in it. And looking back at it, you know, all the things that go into any call throughout the course of the game, whether it's early calls in the game that lead to stuff not working out or calls in the middle, calls at the end, critical calls, always assess those and go forward.
No. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So you kind of took this and ran. I didn't expect you to.
You know, God bless you, David, but yeah, I hadn't thought about that idea. When you said, and you've said this most of the week, that you wanted the mini fridge unplugged,
yes,
and I was like, well, you can still use them as a blocker, and you explained today that you felt that wasn't the case because there was no longer any fear of him getting the ball. I never thought he'd get the ball, frankly. And when you were calling for him to get the ball earlier in the year, just as a gag, I think, whether it be running the ball or catching a pass or something, I thought, like, no, you know, don't do that. Just literally, everybody has their own gimmick for short yardage. Use the guy as a blocker. You get a big body moving into a hole, he clears out the hole, and you ride his rear end through the hole. It seemed like it made sense to me. He didn't have to hold the ball. But your point was, the minute that you've given him the ball and there's been a fumble and now everyone knows you're not giving him the ball again, that means that whole magic of the play disappears and it won't work
as well. There's no question. There's no doubt as a defender what they're going to do. You just have to be tough enough to stop it, stout enough to plug that hole. They're not handing it off to the fullback. They're not going to run a pass play, God forbid, because the element of surprise is missing. Now I think you have to junk the entire operation.
So now that is the case, it makes me wonder if Shane Waldron isn't so much just insane as he is criminal genius.
Okay, he's not playing chess and everyone else is playing checkers.
He is now claiming he'd do it again to breathe new life into the possibility, and now they're going to win in Arizona. See?
I love that you give him that much credit. I am not giving him that much credit. I don't think it's gamesmanship. I don't think he's trying to keep anybody guessing. I think it's hubris.
If it's not gamesmanship, if it is hubris, then he's got to go, like today. So I prefer, knowing that he's not going anywhere, I now prefer to believe that he knows.
So let me just restate and summarize what you just have suggested.
Thank you.
For the sake of gamesmanship, to keep opposing defenses guessing, Shane Waldron is willing to compromise and sacrifice his professional reputation.
That's how good he is.
Wow. That, you think I have come up with some doozies? That's a doozy.
Hey, you led me there.
I did kind of lead you there.
I followed.
Yeah, but I led you there only because I think it's logical to conclude that after having a disaster on your hands, as much as we're like vehemently opposed to him doubling down on it yesterday, I cannot imagine a scenario that would exist where he would line him up again and hand him the ball. Or line him up again, period. Junk it.
Okay, I was vehemently opposed to them ever handing the ball to him. And when they did, I was especially in a game where you can't score and you get to the one-yard line and he's never held the ball. I mean, that was insane.
Now you're just making me mad.
That was incredibly dumb.
I don't want them
now he's turned it around for me.
I don't even want them to just unplug the mini fridge. I want them to call the town hall or waste management and say, okay, pick it up tomorrow with the rest of the garbage. Get it out of here.
Now you want Doug Kramer cut.
It's his fault. Just play lineman. Just put your hand in the dirt and block or snap. That's it.
I would like him to remain as the short yardage fullback And maybe they hand it to him.
No. The only reason I would want that to happen.
I saw the running backs coach said they're working on
it. Yeah, no. Okay. You're giving them much more credit than I am for being sly and shifty.
Apparently, Doug Kramer can also throw if you need him to.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, we got to get back to that. There's only one reason why I want him to carry the ball again, perhaps, and that's only if the Bears are trailing. That is because I think Dustin looks good in green.
Oh, we've got to tell Dustin. We decided while you were fetching the coffee, and you know it's below you, and we appreciate it, and God bless you. But we decided that not only if you turn over your Beardom fandom, if you are no longer, you said you're going to resign as a Bears fan if they give him the ball again, you have to become a Packer fan. So we will.
I think I did say that.
Did I just rescind my Beardom?
You just rescinded your Beardom.
But we're switching it to a. You have to be a Packer fan.
Just remember, it has to be. They give him the ball when they're trailing.
We know the conditions. And you look good in green number four.
Yeah, we'll buy you a Jordan Love jersey.
Oh, you'll even buy me a jersey.
We'll buy you a Jordan Love jersey, and you will have to wear it.
I want 12. I want an old school classic Packer jersey. No, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah,
that's what you want.
Ray Nitschke 66, please. Pride of Haywood.
That's what Nitschke. That's what he wants. That's what you want. I'm going to buy him a Jordan Love. I want Dustin in a green shirt with the word Love on the back of it.
Okay. I love the Packers.
It would complete
Dustin
all of it.
Dustin loves the Packers.
Poor guy has got like welts all over his body. He's broken out in a rash. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.